Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Thursday, December 18th, 2014. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker, CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with Matt Bennett, of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. In agricultural news, U.S. trade groups say normalization of relations with Cuba could boost agricultural exports. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Lisa Braltz says auld lang syne to backyard industries. And well, the latest on agricultural weather. It's all on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Let's see how futures settled on this Thursday afternoon. Hard red winter, March wheat, 683 and three quarters, up 2 1/4. Soft March, 655 and a quarter, up 6 3/4. March corn, 411, up 2 3/4. May, 419 and a half, up 3. July, 426 and a quarter, up 3. December, 434 and 3/4, up 2 3/4. January soybeans, 1035, up 8. March, 1043 and a quarter, up 8. May, 1050 and a quarter, up 9 1/4. July, 1056, up 9 1/4. January soybean meal, $365.30, up $6. March, $353.90, up $4.20. January soybean oil, $31.89, up $12. March, $32.08, up $11. Last trades now. December live cattle, $159.42 and a half. Limit up $3. January feeders, $219.40, up $2.80. And February lean hogs, $81.77 and a half, and they are up $1.30. And those are Thursday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says net drying is expected in quite a few locations in Argentina during the coming week, but rain events for Friday and Saturday of this week and December 26th through the 28th will prove to be very important in slowing the drying trend and keeping crop stress as low as possible. Some unusually cool temperatures are expected this weekend and early next week, which will also help to slow drying rates and buy a little more time for a greater rain event to come along before crops become too dry. Rain will fall in all of Brazil during the next 2 weeks. The least frequent and least significant rain will occur in the far northeastern corner of grain and oil seed country. Rain that falls in far southern Brazil will occur in a couple of brief events, with net drying expected between the two. Rainfall will be greatest in far southern Brazil Saturday and Sunday, with more expected in the first days of January. Despite the brevity of rain in the far south, rain amounts will be moderate to heavy enough to assure no dryness issues through early January. The same can be said for most of Paraguay, although there may be a few drier pockets in that country. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Dave.
Let's just begin with a general question and ask if you think that today's trade was constructive for either would-be corn or soybean bulls.
Well, I think it's, you know, the trend is still up. We did make new highs for the move in corn here today, and we made new highs for the fall move in wheat. But my guess is the way we closed, we did close off for highs. So it does look like there was probably somewhat of an exhaustion here today, maybe prior to the holiday trade. I think trade volume probably even tomorrow is going to start lightening up. But we know for sure it's going to lighten up over the next 2 weeks, as a lot of senior traders will probably take the next 2 weeks off or so, so it'll be fairly quiet. But that doesn't mean that there won't be big moves. A lot of times there are big moves. But my guess is we've had a strong quarter, came out of the hole there, you know, on October 1st on corn and soybeans. Wheat futures kind of had their low more in the middle part of September or toward the end of September. So we're going to close higher for the last quarter. In corn and soybeans case, we're going to have a quarterly reversal to the upside on the books, which I do think that spells that the overall fundamental complex is going to tilt toward the bullish side as we go down the road. As it has over the past couple months. I know the bears are still bearish, but for those that's been wanting to sell into this thing every nickel higher, they've sent an awful lot of money to Chicago. October was a terrible month for them. November wasn't that much better, and so far December has not been that good a month for them. So I do think that, you know, we may have put in a short-term top for now. When you get into a light trade, holiday-type trade volume, about anything could happen. But I don't know what else new could come out. I mean, we've had an awful lot of news thrown at us here over the past 5 to 6 days, and that's maybe climaxed itself, at least for the short term here anyway.
You've been looking at some technical analysis revolving around moving averages, especially the 50 and the 100-day moving averages. What are you seeing?
Well, both corn and wheat did get those golden crosses. For those that follow my Twitter wire, you know, I've been talking about them. They kind of came in the early part of December, and those were kind of the catalyst, I think, behind a lot of this technical buying in corn and wheat futures over the past couple of weeks. Now, with today's close, we're probably gonna have the start or the beginning of maybe a golden cross in January futures and maybe May futures. March futures, for some reason, is not showing up in March futures. But we'll have to see how we close out tomorrow. I think if we have another strong up day in soybeans, then we're going to have that golden cross in place. And in the past, that has usually generated in a lot of system trading buying into the marketplace. So it kind of tells me that the soybean market is at least primed in a way for a surge here over the next, you know, as we go toward the end of the year or maybe to the first part of the year. But we'll have to see how, you know, we close out the week tomorrow.
If we were to get that cross, could we see a 50-cent move? Would that be reasonable over time?
Yeah, I would say that if we get a good, solid golden cross, we'll take out the highs in bees. We'll make new highs for the move up. I know a lot of people are wanting to look at a head and shoulders top formation on the beans, but if you take a second look at it, there is a little head and shoulders bottom formation in it. And if we could get a good surge to the upside above that little neckline, then that would call for a push into new highs out of the October 1st rally.
We have to spend some time talking about the U.S. dollar, Dan, because it has been rallying almost practically straight up on other nations' woes, and we're now approaching a level that is the top of a sideways range that is multi-year. What does it potentially mean?
Well, if we would bust above this 90 index level, that would be kind of a breakout of a seven-year sideways trend or eight-year, depending upon how you want to look at it. And it would really argue for a very strong dollar. And I think what it would be signaling is that interest rates, higher interest rates, are coming sooner than what the trade is thinking. I know the Federal Reserve Board said that they're looking at 2% inflation before they raise interest rates. Mm-hmm. But if you look at today's bond market, or at least earlier, I don't know how we're going to close on bonds, but we were sharply lower in bonds. And we do have a big bubble in government bonds throughout the world. And I think that is the most scariest thing economically, because if that bubble gets busted, then we begin to see higher interest rates all over the world, and then that would send the if they think the economy is weak now, just wait till your higher interest rates begin to take hold every place around the country.
And I suppose we ought to have a word or two about wheat before we let you go.
Well, wheat has been on the front burner because of the situation that we're seeing in Russia. I think a lot of people were clearly short, and I think today's probably pulled the plug on a lot of those shorts. A lot of people took a good slapping today if they were short the market. There is speculation that the situation in Russia may generate new export business for the U.S. That's probably more longer term than shorter term. Mm-hmm. If Russia's economy would happen to really dip into a depression type mode, then you begin to wonder how much food production that they could pump out of their country. Okay. Then we even get into a situation that does the U.S. end up bailing out Russia? I'm sure there's some New York bankers that's got some money invested in Russia that's probably already knocking on the door for a bailout of some kind. So that'll be something to kind of watch over the next several weeks in here.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Very well. This is my last time, I guess, for the end of the year, so I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And the same right back at you. Appreciate it. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. In agricultural news, U.S. Grain Council officials say that U.S. agricultural exports should become one of the early economic winners under President Barack Obama's announcement yesterday to reestablish diplomatic relations with Cuba and ease some trade and travel restrictions. USDA reports that $415.2 million in ag exports to Cuba in 2013 and about $300 million reported so far this year. Frozen poultry products and corn make up more than half of the major commodity exports to Cuba in a given year, but exports have been limited because of third-party banking requirements and limited lines of credit for Cuban buyers. The regulatory restrictions requiring cash in advance for the export of agricultural or medical goods from the U.S. will be modified to allow cash before transfer of title provisions that would require payment before goods arrive at Cuban ports. The union representing 20,000 dock workers remains at loggerheads with a group of employers at 29 West Coast ports in contract talks. The union so far has opposed federal mediation because it says that the two sides are still making headway. Container ports along the Pacific account for nearly half of U.S. maritime trade and over 70% of the imports from Asia. Yesterday, McDonald's in Japan limited French fry sales to one small purchase per person due to a lack of potatoes due to the West Coast dispute, which has slowed shipments. The Federal Reserve yesterday announced that it would be patient in deciding when to raise its benchmark rate from a record low where it's been since December of 2008. The Fed says that the strength of U.S. economic data and the level of inflation, not a calendar deadline, will dictate when the Fed ultimately raises rates. In an updated economic outlook, the Fed lowered its inflation forecast for next year to between 1 and 1.6%. The Fed's announced target rate of inflation is 2%. The Fed's statement was approved on a 7-3 vote. Kraft Foods Group Incorporated says that CEO Tony Vernon plans to retire later this month. The company named Chairman John Cahill as his successor. Cahill previously served as chairman and CEO of Pepsi Bottling Group. He joined Kraft in January of 2012. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Friends of WILL. And from Common Ground Food Co-op in downtown Urbana, with a deli featuring iced lattes made with fairly traded ingredients and local milk, and a salad bar filled with local and organic ingredients. More information is at commonground.coop.
Up next, Lisa Brops says all good things eventually come to an end in this grand finale edition of Backyard Industry.
Another year's end is already upon us, so it's time for a look back at this season of Backyard Industry. Let's reminisce. Gatherings and shindigs have always been a favorite topic of coverage here at Backyard Industry, and 2014 was no exception. Whether it was getting people together to eat meals in bowls to fend off January and February's polar vortices, or indoor lawn games organized to help friends get their yayas out in very early spring after being cooped up inside for what seemed like forever, or a small gathering to chow down on green tomatoes before a hard frost in late October, Backyard Industry maintained its fondness for get-togethers this year. I submitted my very first book reviews in 2014, Ava Chin's Eating Wildly in August and Suzanne Cope's Small Batch earlier this month. I made yogurt and pickled asparagus for the first time and got really close to the message in Kevin West's cookbook, Saving the Season. Preserve what you have, keep it simple, and enjoy the process. Landa Lynn Haupt's Urban Bestiary also made an appearance this year, inspiring a trek toward downtown Champaign with Environmental Almanac's Rob Cantor to search for fauna well beyond mere squirrels in the park. That's where we saw the muskrat, remember? I've always been up for a field trip. This year, I walked the alleys of East Urbana looking for feral food and semi-secret gardens, but also for clues about my neighborhood. I attended the opening of poultry enthusiast Karen Carney's chicken coop in Champaign. I learned about eating invasive species from Dustin Kelly in rural Urbana, and was on hand for the delivery of 100 pounds of red wigglers, those are worms, for the massive vermicomposting project at the University of Illinois Sustainable Student Farm. I stopped in a separate time this year at the farm to talk to the farm's manager, Zach Grant, about the basil downy mildew that was destroying basil plants all over our part of Illinois this summer. 2014 was a busy year, but this segment isn't just about the end of the year. It's about the end of this particular road. I've said before that Backyard Industry has really grown to be about the triumph of the small neighborly gesture, the simple gathering of friends, the humble attempt at trying something new. What's funny is that in 2010, when Backyard Industry got its start on AM 580 as In My Backyard, I had no idea what I was doing. These episodes, all 93 of them, have been humble attempts at something new. The most basic writing advice in the world is to write about what you know, and that's what I did when I started. The very first episode of In My Backyard aired on June 10th, 2010, and was basically a call to gardening action whose working title was Stop Talking and Start Digging. Then I started writing more about what I knew less about or didn't know anything at all about. and telling the stories of my neighbors, friends, and community as they made their way through pickling, sausage making, sap boiling, seed swapping, and smoker building. People whose romances bloomed over food offered details for the radio. An episode about amateur food photography in restaurants went fully meta when we snapped photos of our lunch. We even branched out into video and will be producing a few new ones over the next several months. Telling you guys about these things on the radio has been super fun, but it's time to take a break. Backyard Industry Radio, all 93 episodes, will live happily online on WILL's website at will.illinois.edu/backyardindustry. Backyard Industry will also continue to be a small but mighty force on a variety of social media, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and Tumblr. The blog at backyardindustry.org will be updated much more frequently with writing and photos. And as for the future of Backyard Industry over the airwaves, I'm not sure. You never know. But thank you, thank you, thank you so much for listening. For Backyard Industry, this is Lisa Braltz.
Joining us now with a look at the cash grain market is Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Have to ask you, with this rally in corn, are people peeling off some increment and making some sales?
Yeah, there's been a little more cash movement. We saw a fair amount of farmers selling, their last Friday with that 9-cent move, and then this week as the market's kind of inched back up and, continue to show some strength. We've seen some guys selling a little bit of corn here and there, and I think it's probably a good thing to do. Obviously, there's some reasons you could point to as to why the market could continue higher, but plain and simple, when you get this kind of rally, a guy needs a reward at least to a degree.
What do you think basis will do after the first of the year, the first month of the year?
Well, that's a great question. You know, basis, real basis to me, since really the first of October, has improved about 35 cents. And so, it's been interesting to see it improve at the time that it did. And so moving forward, it's kind of a tough call. I do think that there's a lot of people still looking for corn. And so bottom line is, I don't think that it's going to fall out of bed by any means, but I don't look for it to improve near as much as what we've already seen.
So then if farmers remain tight holders after the first of the year, could we see a pretty significant basis play going into the February-March timeframe?
I think if they remain tight holders, that's certainly possible. If I'm going to be sitting on a whole lot of bushels, I'll probably keep a little bit of protection for myself, because I think there's a variety of factors that probably none of us are even thinking about at this point, but plain and simply, I'm not super bullish on the soybean market, and so if the beans come under a little bit of pressure, it might be really tough on the corn to rally, and at that point, if corn went down, I think you could definitely see basis improve, especially if guys are tight holders.
I heard you say you're not terribly bullish on the beans. I would think a lot of the old crop have already gone. What about new crop?
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea to be making some new crop sales in here. We've had several shots above $10 NOV, and to me, there's been a lot of times when people have been standing around wondering if, one of the dips that we've seen under 10 at times, might be the last time a guy got a chance to sell them. And so I think that a person probably needs to be selling in increments, putting some floors under the beans, because I think if South America has the kind of crop some people are predicting, and we go ahead and plant 85, 86 million acres, whatever it is that it may be, it's going to be a lot of acres. It could be really tough on the bean market to rally.
10 seconds for your prices.
Okay, we're looking at cash corn at 382 next fall, 395 cash beans, 1020, and 979 for next fall.
Thank you much, Matt.
Thank you, Dave.
That's Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. It's National Roast Suckling Pig Day. A suckling pig is a young pig that has only been fed on its mother's milk. Traditionally, the dish is roasted and the skin is valued for pork rinds. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, New Jersey became the third state to enter the United States. New Jersey's many truck farms, orchards, and flower gardens give the state its nickname, the Garden State. In 1865, slavery was abolished in the United States. The 13th Amendment proclaimed neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, save as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. At the time of its ratification, slavery remained legal only in Delaware, Kentucky, and Missouri. By the way, Illinois was the first state of the Union to ratify the amendment, passing it on February 1st of 1865. Also in 1865, the first U.S. cattle importation law was passed, and in 1991, the International Project to Save the Brazilian Rainforest was launched. The controversial initiative attempted to stem new logging and ranching in the Amazon. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us on the closing market report to talk about the weather is Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mike.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's begin down in South America, where it does appear that weather is relatively benign.
It certainly is. We haven't seen a whole lot in the way of heat or dryness to this point in the growing season. If you recall, it was fairly dry early in the growing season across portions of Brazil, but now the rainy season is underway, and we're starting to see good rainfall across a large area. You could even argue that a few areas might be seeing too much rainfall, especially when you add in some of the rains that we expect over the next week. A strong cool front does sweep across Argentina and then into Brazil and Paraguay this weekend, and more so into early next week. Between that rainfall event, we're looking for fairly widespread amounts of 1.5 to 3 inches across Brazil and Paraguay. Now, keep in mind, average rainfall for the next 10 days is around 1.75 to 2.5 inches. So we're not talking about a crazy situation there, just a little bit wetter than normal. In South Brazil and Paraguay, which are significant corn and soybean producing regions, it has been a little bit dry at times over the last 30 days. But we're not concerned about it anymore because there were a few storms just over the last couple of days. And then it's very clear that on Sunday and Monday, they should see a round of heavy storms that will essentially wipe out any of the dryness pockets that existed. So there's really not a ton going on down there. The only thing we would have to watch for is how wet does it end up being. And also in Argentina, there are some wet areas there. But again, this is pretty minor stuff at this point. There's just nothing that's getting too out of hand to this point.
Let's turn our attention to the Midwest, where we're still quite a few days from Christmas Day. But that being said, as you look into your long-range crystal ball, any chance of weather events around Christmas? And could we have a white Christmas?
There's a small chance that we could see a white Christmas. It will turn notably colder next week. An Arctic front moves on through Monday and Tuesday and into Wednesday. We'll see some rain and some areas of snow with that. Now, we're not looking for a major snowstorm, but the one concern that we do have going forward is that this cold pattern lasts all the way through next week and into the following week. So we could be looking at below average temperatures all the way into the first, let's say, 5 days of January. That setup is conducive to a winter storm at some point, though it's very hard to say when or where that would occur. But we would just encourage people to keep a closer eye on the weather once we get into later next week and going into January, because the pattern is a lot more active than it has been recently.
Do you want to make a case for a weak El Nino now in effect off the Pacific?
Well, there certainly is. I mean, if you look at ocean temperatures, they are a bit warmer than usual, and they're expected to stay that way. The only issue with that is that it's very likely to remain only slightly warmer than normal, and that indicates a weak El Nino event. Weak El Nino events are not highly correlated to weather in the central United States or anywhere in the world for that matter. So even though it is important to follow that, We would only become more interested in it if it were to turn into a strong event, which at this point is very unlikely.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. This is Dave Dickey.